I'm in the, I guess it's the antechamber of the marriage license department. I'm talking to two people who also are subscribers to WBAI, which, since they're getting married, shows a meritable level of responsibility, I suppose, for our subscribers. Do you, here, about to apply for a marriage license, do you feel that you understand sufficiently the rights and responsibilities of one of you vis-a-vis the other?
Well, since we don't have any property to speak of at the moment, it's not really a question to consider. But, yeah, I think we understand it, I think.
Do you think would you like to see such a booklet? In other words, I guess I'm really asking you, did you consider these kinds of questions?
I'll tell you something. We've both been married before. And the first time I got married, it was an Orthodox Jewish ceremony. And I would say fully two-thirds of the marriage certificate concerned itself with how to get divorced. And isn't that kind of absurd? I mean, why worry about things like that?
Well, you got divorced.
Yeah, I know.
Do you feel comfortable in... would you like to know more about these kinds of issues? Is it important to you, I guess is what I'm asking.
I really don't know anything about it. I mean, I really don't know the legal end of it. When I was divorced, I had no property at all except for a few paintings, which I was lucky enough to get. And, gee, I never thought about it. But, you know, I'm not sure that it's right. I mean, I'd like to know what it is. But I'm not sure that I would have wanted maybe what I could have got from my ex-husband.
Well, I guess the test of it would, I mean, it would really be that you would presumably be more aware of what your options were.
Well, I think that would be a good thing.
I suppose so, yeah. I suppose it would be a good thing.
Do you think that would be a good idea to give out such a booklet?
No, I don't.
Why is that?
Well, I think a man knows what he's getting into when he gets married, and a woman shouldn't. If they don't know enough, then they shouldn't get married because they're not old enough.
Do you think that you both know the legal aspects of what you're getting into?
Yeah, I would say yes. If by the time you get down here, if you can't trust the woman you're with down here, where you need pamphlets and booklets, well, you may as well forget about it then. You can't trust your lawyer, I mean your landlord, for certain reasons, because he's scheming and conniving, whatever have you, you know. But if you don't know the woman that you're down here with, you shouldn't be down here.
Well, it isn't so much they say that you couldn't trust her, but that you might not know some aspect of the law. There may be a part of the law that you just are not aware of.
She's the only one I could prosecute on you, and then you wouldn't really know her that well if she was to jump the gun, you know.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, I don't believe in women's equality to begin with. I mean, I'm dead against it. There's no reason for it. I mean, I don't come down here with the intent of getting divorced a year from now and collecting alimony or child support.
You said that you didn't believe in women's equality. Why is that?
A woman belongs at home with her house and kids, cleaning, chores, whatever. If she's got extra time, let her play tennis.
What do you think of women's liberation?
I agree with 100% with what she said. A woman's job is home with the children. She should get married. That's the normal thing to do, is go out and get married and have children, take care of them, take care of the house, so on and so forth. She shouldn't be out in all these movements, and if she wants to be like that, she should be a career woman and don't get married. Don't bother to get married, because when you get married, you know the responsibility that you have. It's with your children and your family and your home, providing for them.
That was a report by Bill Schechner at the Marriage License Bureau this afternoon, and there was one woman's opinion of the day's events. This is WBAI in New York. We're presently broadcasting a recapitulation of the entire August 26th women's strike. And the next report we're going to hear is Bruce Soloway's coverage of one of the Barefoot and Pregnant Awards, this one at Katherine Gibbs.
About 40 women from the Women's Strike Collective visited the offices of the Katherine Gibbs Secretarial School at 200 Park Avenue this afternoon to protest the school's alleged role in relegating women to secretarial and other subservient positions in the business world. When they reached the school's third floor offices, they were met by the school's president, Alan Baker, who spent a half hour discussing the women's accusations with the entire group. The women charged at the Catherine Gibbs School discriminates against women in its advertising and trains women to accept positions of low salary and prestige, even when they are qualified for higher level jobs. The tone of the conversation was open and even-tempered, and Mr. Baker admitted at several points that the school might be guilty of some of the women's allegations, and he said that he would initiate a re-examination of the school's programs. Here is a portion of that conversation.
How come men don't need an entree training program?
Exactly.
Well, paid. They don't have to pay to take
it. I think you should all recognize that what you're putting me in the position of is defending a system that I don't necessarily...
You're fortifying it with your ads.
That's right.
You're fortifying it with your school. Women learn to be an executive assistant. That's fortifying the existing way that...
On the other hand, we...
What are your future plans for recruiting men into the Catherine Gibbs School? Train them to have exciting positions.
We have plans which I would prefer not to announce at this time.
But let
me finish. Because we're still in the business of developing a curriculum. We're still in the process of developing a curriculum. But we will announce within the next 6 months programs which will appeal both to men and to women,
Why
we feel.
Why can't the same program that the women attend appeal to men?
Well, I think we're all a victim of the system at this point, don't you?
Don't you think that you're fortifying the system?
I was a secretary.
You were?
Yes. We called it administrative assistant, but I was...
But I was
a secretary.
Did you get his call?
Isn't that up to the girl who's on the job?
Clothes?
This is what I'm trying to investigate, really. I think this is really important, is the general atmosphere of subservience and the office wife syndrome. And my understanding is that Catherine Gibbs does reinforce this. Please your man at any cost, because remember, your job is pleasing men.
I think that if that is true in our course today, it's time to take a good look at it, and I promise you that we will, because that's an area that needs exploration.
Anda Leo of Now was the group's main spokeswoman, and when the large meeting broke up, she made an appointment to discuss the issues in more detail with Mr. Baker next week. This is Bruce Soloway reporting.
That report came to us from Catherine Gibbs Secretarial School this afternoon, one of the winners of one of the Barefoot and Pregnant Awards. Continuing with our chronological recapitulation of today's strike activities, Bruce Soloway was at the march, and here's his report.
The Women's March for Equality started about a half hour late this evening, but is now moving at a steady pace down Fifth Avenue, and has already reached about 53rd Street. The march consists of many thousands of people. It's impossible to estimate the size of the crowd at this point. It extends all the way across Fifth Avenue. There's no traffic on the avenue right now, and it's several blocks long. Last time I looked, it was at least five or six blocks long. The march is moving slowly. There's a line of marshals in front of the crowd, keeping it contained and moving it at a slow pace, stopping every now and then to let crosstown traffic move across Fifth Avenue. The march was delayed in starting. It started about 6 o'clock rather than 5:30. The reason for the delay was apparently an inability of the march organizers to get the crowd contained in one area before starting on the march. This is Bruce Soloway from Fifth Avenue.
Bella Abzug, the Democratic candidate in the 19th Congressional District, was one of the main speakers at the rally, which took place at Bryant Park, where the march culminated. Here's Bella Abzug speaking at this evening's rally.
We should rejoice today, because today we are making it clear that we declare that there is a women's liberation in this movement in the city of New York and throughout the nation of these United States.
Bella Abzug is candidate for Congress in the 17th District.
We declare that today, 50 years after suffrage, the women once again are saying that we shall share in the full economic, political, and social life of our country. Today, the women are saying that we shall have a national comprehensive 24-hour child care system for the 40 and 50% of America's working women, and yay for all of the women in this country. Today, we say that we shall have a free abortion on demand under medical supervision as a matter of a national health right available to all of us. Today, we say that no one, no institution of industry, no institution of government, no institution of society can deny women's clear demand for equal pay, for equal employment opportunity, and for equal educational opportunity. But more than that, the women say today that our liberation movement represents an expression of the full political power of women's 53% vote in this country. And we shall use this power, we say, to America and to the power structure. All of us, regardless of our view of the system and its lack of responsiveness to our needs, the needs of women, referred to here as the oppressed majority, the needs of the black, the needs of the Puerto Rican, the needs of the poor, and the needs of all of us for a decent share of America. We demand today our full share of the decision-making process, and we demand today our full share of the vast resources and energies of this country. But we shall not attain the true meaning of our liberation. We shall not attain the true meaning of our equality unless we also struggle against that in society which oppresses all of us. That war in Indochina, the militarization in our society, which seeks to render all of society impotent to cope with the dislocations of our time. What we are saying here today as we struggle for women's liberation, that we, the women of this country, shall lead in a mighty liberation, a liberation of womankind and mankind from military expansion. From repression against those who seek social change, and from the malignant neglect that is visited upon all of us by the policies of government which oppresses us. What we are saying today is that we, the women, will take off where we started 50 years ago, when in our struggle against the abolition for slavery, we found that we were not free unless we freed ourselves. Well, we declare our freedom today. We declare our freedom so that we can help make this country free and indeed make the world free from military intervention, from oppression of women, oppression of black minorities and other groups, from participating in a full life, from participating in a truly great world, a non-nuclear world in which all of the peoples in it are free to develop themselves in their own style and image, in which all of the people are sovereign. In which all of the people are sovereign in their liberation. And so, sisters and brothers, as we go out today, let us build this mighty movement bigger and bigger. Let us give notice and serve notice on all institutions of our society, on all governments in our society, in all industry of our society, in all institutions, and say that the women's liberation movement shall lead in this country and in the world to provide a peaceful society and a future for the generations that come, a future for free people, a future in which we all partake in the decision-making process and partake in a just distribution of all the resources of the people for the benefit of the many instead of the benefit of the few.
I stand corrected. Bella Abzug is candidate from the 19th Congressional District, Democrat, but more important than that, she's long been identified with peace and women's liberation speeches and causes.
That we must struggle for liberation every day, and that we shall succeed for the power and the rights of all of the people. Thank you.
That was Bella Abzug as she spoke this evening at the rally for the August 26th women's strike. The next speaker is Eleanor Holmes Norton, who's the chairman of the New York City Commission on Human Rights. She also was one of the main speakers at this evening's rally.
It is not surprising that America, so long deaf and blind to the inhumanity of racial oppression, would come late to understand sexual oppression. It is not surprising in America, where migrants still live like animals, where Puerto Ricans and Mexican Americans still are not full citizens, where Italians and Jews and other ethnic groups still are stereotyped, where the poor remain shunted into ghastly ghettos and rural enclaves. With all this unfinished business for equality, it is not surprising that women have emerged late as the largest single group to which America still owes equal protection. There are two obvious ways in which America would be thrown into bankruptcy tomorrow. If the Supreme Court were to rule that the country had to pay back wages for the free labor it got from black slaves and the exploited labor it has gotten from their black descendants. Or if the courts were to require that back wages be paid for the free labor of women, or to rectify the inequality in pay they receive for working. But blacks and women are making a far simpler demand, one within the easy grasp of a rich country, one that carries no dangers of bankruptcy. Beginning today, women demand that we erase all the empty and artificial barriers. Sex, like color, is most often a meaningless criterion, which becomes an oppressive criterion when it is considered among the qualifications for a job. No form of discrimination against women is more extensive, more serious, or more costly than job discrimination. Yet many Americans have fooled themselves into believing that women work for the fun instead of for the necessity of it. The cost of living in a constantly inflationary economy such as ours makes working a necessity for almost all women who work. Women, like men, want to work for reasons of self-fulfillment, but like most men, most women work because they have no choice. America, you cannot turn your face from these facts. Listen. The average working woman is 39 years old, married and living with a husband who needs her salary to supplement his. Almost half of all mothers work, a quarter of them with children under 3 years old. 50% of white mothers with children 6 to 17 work, and 62% of black mothers with children these ages work. Do these sound like women with time on their hands?
WBAI, New York.
These figures tell the true story that women work because they must, but are forced to make far more sacrifices than men to enter the job market that demands their labor. Women must work, but for only 58% of the average male salary. Women must work, but clerical work remains their mainstay with few other fields open to them. Women must work, but only 31 states have laws guaranteeing them equal pay for equal work. Women must work, but only 15 states forbid job discrimination based on sex. America has learned to decry statistics such as these when they apply to the oppressed minorities. When will they learn that such statistics are just as shameful when they relate to America's oppressed majority? Statistics like these are a major reason women demand immediate passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. Like blacks, women are unwilling to leave their rights to the whim of the legislatures which have denied those rights for so long. What the legislature gives, it can take back. What it enacts, it can repeal. Nothing short of a constitutional amendment can wipe away job inequality. With all the protective legislation on the books, women are still the largest group of exploited workers in the country. The latest Department of Labor statistics show that women are the fastest growing group of unemployed workers in this current period of recession. When women lose their jobs, their families, their children suffer. For the so-called extra money most women earn often means the difference between poverty and modest comfort. Although this is obviously the case for black women who work, what the country has refused to face is that it is also the case for white women who work. Thus, women, white and black, have common cause to see that America does not replace job discrimination based on race with job discrimination based on sex as the country's most serious domestic problem. Let me close with a word on black women, because their role in the struggle for sexual equality is much confused. Indeed, I wear the dress of my African forebears tonight, not to be senselessly symbolic, but to dramatize the fact that black women have a stake in the fight for equality for women. Because they are the most exploited women. Unlike the white woman, the black woman has always worked, from slavery to today, because the black family in America could not have survived without her meager wages to supplement the paltry pay of her husband, or in some cases to substitute for him as breadwinner. Yes, America welcomed black women into the job market as charwomen, mammies, maids, and domestics. The plight of the black woman worker vividly illustrates that the fight is not simply for jobs, but against exploitive working conditions for women workers. Household workers, waitresses, scrub women, and migrant workers should be at the front of the line today to tell America that it must not only open more jobs to women, but it must make exploitive women's jobs into dignified and well-paid work.
That was Eleanor Holmes Norton, chairman of the New York City Commission on Human Rights, speaking at this evening's rally in Bryant Park. You're listening to WBAI in New York, and we're recapitulating the day's events. We began in sort of chronological order, and we're currently in the midst of the rally. The next speaker is Kate Millett, author of the current bestseller, Sexual Politics and Ardent Women's Liberationist.
You know, today is a really beautiful day, right? And like, you're beautiful, I love you. We have a movement now. We're never gonna stop. This is the 50th anniversary of the first movement and its death. And it's the beginning of the new movement. Today is the first day of our lives. From now on, we're a revolution. Today is the end of millenniums of our oppression. We will never be slaves again. We have been slaves for thousands of years. We have been raped, pillaged, burned, murdered, cut into pieces. We have been prostituted. We have been sequestered in homes, treated like animals. We have been harassed daily on the streets. We are subject still. Yeah, you know that.
WBAI, New York.
We are subject still to the living slavery of prostitution. And tonight, all over Broadway and 57th Street, oppressed women will have to sell themselves to eat. But this is going to stop. Nowhere do we suffer as much as in this one concrete form of slavery left, in prostitution. Pimps are slave drivers. Prostitutes are exploited by everybody. By the vice squad, who are pimps. A pimp, the dictionary says, a pimp lives on the earnings of a prostitute. Well, but what we're out to end is a whole system, and it's called sexism. You know, and it's everywhere. It's in people's heads. It's in their attitudes, their values, their psychological set. It's taught to them from the time of their infancy. It's like racism. And baby, it's hard to get rid of, but we're gonna do it.